the InfoWars Nightly News. It is Friday, May 9th, 2014, and I'm Leanne McAdoo. Well, apparently, a Mexican drug cartel had a stash house in St. Paul, Minnesota. And when 30 pounds of meth and $200,000 was stolen from the home, the people who were thought to be involved were tortured and kidnapped by the drug cartel. But you'd never know that, because the official press release that was released by the Department of Justice described the incident and simply omitted this vital information. This is, of course, because it's amid national discussions of immigration reform and all of the debates that are regarding the importance of border security. They just decided to omit these little tidbits of information. The U.S. Attorney's Office described the men as having roles in a large-scale methamphetamine trafficking organization. You don't say. Now, this isn't the first time that the Department of Justice has downplayed the reach of Mexican drug cartels inside the United States. This is, of course, to convince people that the borders are safe and secure. And the Department of Homeland Security has admitted in congressional testimony that they don't even keep track of cartel violence in the U.S. This, of course, allows them plausible deniability. So they don't have to admit that. But we are told that we are being spied on, and the Department of Homeland Security is working so hard to protect the nation and protect us inside of our borders. Meanwhile, they're giving a pass to the drug cartels and the criminals who are already in the country. Of course, the American people will be outraged if they knew the true reach of these drug cartels and probably aren't just going to open up the borders. Now, John McCain, he says, you know what? Who cares if the Department of Homeland Security is not really doing that great of a job? We should just get used to being spied on. He said, this is the world we live in. Just get used to it. In response to a question regarding his thoughts on the whole Donald Sterling controversy, the senator told a radio show that Americans should accept the notion that their private conversations are being recorded by the government, even in the privacy of their own homes. He said, it's the world we're living in. You don't like it, but everything I say, I expect to be recorded. It's just the way we live, Dan. It's something you've got to accept. So now we have to accept that something we do or say in the privacy of our own home could get us in trouble and be used against us, a la Donald Sterling, who is now having his private property taken away from him. They're forcing him to sell his team. But what this is he's just trying to massage it into your brain that you're not even allowed to think inside your own home. You're not allowed to have your own personal thoughts, even if they are repulsive, racist thoughts, what Donald Sterling was caught on tape saying, allegedly. But you know what? We're not allowed to even think. Just ask Christian twins David and Jason Benham. Their HGTV show was canceled just one day after a report came out saying they didn't like their Christian ideology. This was a report issued by People for the American Way. And they said that they were, in 2012, they told a conservative radio host that America's Christian majority must repent for tolerating homosexuality and its agenda that's attacking the nation and the demonic ideologies that are taking our universities and public school systems. The brothers, of course, have now responded to this, saying they're saddened to hear about HGTV's decision, basically saying all the grotesque things that can be seen and heard on TV today, you'd think there'd be enough room for two twin brothers who are faithful to our families, committed to biblical principles, and dedicated professionals. If our faith costs us a television show, then so be it. So here, once again, we are witnessing this agenda to silence people, and especially Christians. These guys weren't planning on making their show a faith-based show. They were just gonna have fun flipping houses, but because of their Christian beliefs, their show gets canceled. Meanwhile, an atheist TV channel is set to launch this summer because the creators there say there just isn't enough out there that's with godlessness and celebrating godlessness. It's a New Jersey-based atheist group. They want to reach out to atheists, humanists, free thinkers, and others who are just simply looking for a way out of faith, and they're going to be propagating godlessness. And the spokesman says, there's a glut of religious TV programming out there, from televangelists to Christmas specials, but there's no atheist channel, so we just wanted to fill that void. Now, I really do not know what these guys are talking about because you can flip to any channel on the television. If you have 500 cable channels, you can have even more immorality and godlessness in your face. I really don't know what this guy is speaking about. And the twins are absolutely right. There is a whole demonic ideology that is taking the university and the public school systems by storm. Just ask Harvard. They are planning to hold a satanic black mass reenactment on Monday as part of their cultural studies. Now, the mass will be performed by the Satanic Temple, and they're going to provide narration on the academic and historical aspects of a satanic mass. Now, the Satanic Temple is the same group that is going to be having that statue of the kid-friendly Baphomet installed on the grounds of the Oklahoma State Capitol. But the temple leader says, hey, don't worry, the host of the mass won't be consecrated because they neither believe in nor invoke the supernatural. They're saying it's just a representation of a satanic ritual as part of a student-led effort to explore different cultures. See, so if you want to worship Satan or if you want to go sit on Baphomet's lap, that's fine because there is freedom of religion unless your religion is Christianity. Then you need to keep your mouth shut. Now, apparently it's gotten so bad, a number of Catholics in Rome are saying that the decline of the religion in the West has gotten so bad, it's plaguing people. They're creating this rise in the black magic and the occult, and they're now training more exorcists. They're going to be a six-day meeting in Rome to train about 200 Roman Catholic priests from more than 30 countries. They'll be training them in how to cast out evil from people who believe themselves to be enthralled to the devil. Because of the increasing number of lay people tempted to dabble in black magic, paganism, and the occult. So now they are going to be pushing this because there's just so much godlessness in the world and people are just going crazy. It's so in your face. I'm going to be doing a more in-depth report on just how in your face it is. That'll be coming out on Monday, but it is truly sickening to see what all is out there and how immoral things have gotten and how it's being promoted by the Illuminati mainstream media as just this wonderful and innovative new technology that we should all just embrace. It's the world we live in now, right, John McCain? Now, it's not just going to be Christians who are facing persecution currently. The FBI is also coming after all of those Bundy supporters. They said anyone of those patriots out there who were supporting Clive and Bundy, they've launched an investigation into the alleged death threats, intimidation, and possible weapons violation. The police said they feared for their lives that day because of the assembled firepower and because many in the crowd had pointed weapons at officers, taunted them, and told them that they should be ready to die. Now, forget the fact that we have video of the cops tasering people, pushing down an older woman, kicking people, sicking their dogs on them. They were the aggressors in that. It's on video. They were telling the people to stay where they were or they would shoot them. We will shoot you. I mean, all of that is caught on video. They were the ones making the death threats. So it's just totally Orwellian, but it is not the time to back down. Got to continue standing up to this intimidation. File complaints of your own. You can find the link where Bundy is filing some complaints of his own. That's up at InfoWars in one of our articles. But basically, we just can't allow the police to engage in their scare tactics and their abuse. And now the FBI is going to try and intimidate people as well. But even people in the town, they went to the council meetings there and they all were in support of Clive and Bundy and all of his supporters. They said that if local law enforcement officers had been performing their duties, the militia wouldn't have been needed. Now, coming up later in the show, David Knight is going to be speaking with a former police officer turned attorney. He was so fed up without being able to get anything done inside the system that he went outside of the system, and now he is going to be using the law to check law enforcement. That's coming up right after this.
The This is Alex Jones for InfoWarsLife.com. The latest in preparedness is now here. An electrically stabilized colloidal silver solution that can be added to both your home cabinet and preparedness pack alike. Concentrated to 30 parts per million in what has been dubbed the survival silver solution. And it's entirely free of toxic artificial additives that are loaded into many products. Purchase your bottle of InfoWarsLife.com Silver Bullet Colloidal Silver today. And find other amazing supplements at InfoWarsLife.com.
A chemical spill contaminating the water supply in 9 West Virginia counties.
This year alone, over 300,000 people in West Virginia had their drinking water contaminated.
What are the health effects of having these drugs in our drinking water?
It's forced medical treatment without the consent of residents.
My friends, water filtration is one of the most basic actions you can take to protect you and your family from the harmful toxins and heavy metals in your tap water.
On average, the county says it sprays with the glyphosate at least once a week.
Few filters cut out the glyphosate that is found in water supplies worldwide. Remove pesticides, herbicides, chloramines, hydrofluorosilicic acid, sodium hexafluorosilicate.
Fluoride, it is in tea, it's in coffee, it's in water, it's in bread, it's in toothpaste.
It is our responsibility to protect our families. The establishment's not going to do it. It's time to take action. It's time to filter our water. For a limited time, use the promo code WATER15 and get 15% off on all ProPure systems at InfoWarsStore.com or call toll free 888-253-3139.
Hey guys, Rob Dew here and Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs. I saw this video last night and it just, you know, sometimes you see something you go, eh, there's something not right about this. I knew it was fake. It was on the Mail Online. It's got about 600,000 views now. What is this mysterious aircraft film blitzing Taliban base in Afghanistan? Footage shows UFO blasting terrorist encampment. So I sent the video to Joe. We got together this morning. He debunked it in about 10 minutes and we're going to show you what we found. And also, weapons that are out there, that are out of this world, that are currently being used. So, you know, while this is a pretty interesting video to watch and share and throw around there, there are some serious things out there that we are going to discuss. But first, let's go to the video. Joe, I'm going to hit play on this and tell us what we're watching.
Well, as you can see, you've got this horribly edited in UFO flying around that they're saying is a actual UFO getting ready to attack a Taliban base. Now, if I was a Marine, I've got a lot of buddies who are Marines. I was in the Army. One thing I do know about them, something like this goes off, they're yelling and screaming. There's no way that these guys are just quiet, sitting there holding their camera. Second of all, I've been to combat, and I've seen an explosion similar to that. So when he showed me that video, made me run through a few ideas. At first, I was thinking, you know, maybe a couple different javelins or something like that. But then I was thinking an F-22 delivers what's called a JDAMs. Now, shoots out and then busts off into 8 different missiles and then hits. So what we did is I went to YouTube, pulled up some JDAMs footage, and needless to say, it's the exact same explosion. All right, they've called in an F-22, and they're waiting on a payload to come in for the JDAMs. And when you see this explosion, you'll see the explosion at the bottom originate, and then you'll see it come at the top like it did in the UFO video right there. How it shoots off like that. That shows that it's flying at that angle.
And then
angle.
There's a second explosion, just like the video that we just saw. So right there, you're looking at the same exact weapon. And so there, it's debunked right there. But then what I did was I took the video and slow it down, and I'm going to show you that right now. So here it is, slow motion. You can watch this thing. Watch it jump up and down. The camera doesn't even move, and you'll see it jump up and down. Right. It's going to happen right here. See, there it does. Right after the camera moves, it starts moving back and forth. Like, it's definitely not in the frame while it's being shot. And I'll play that again one more time, full screen for you guys to see. And you could actually see that it moves up and down when the camera's not even moving. A telltale sign that you're looking at something fake.
Nice try, guys, though. It was,
It's clever. Probably it's a promo for some new sci-fi thriller that's going to come out about aliens and alien technology.
Or maybe it's a way that they want to scare Putin to think that we have that kind of technology.
Right, exactly. So here we want to show you some things that are being used by our military and the military police against citizens, against insurgents, against terrorists. Back in 2009, I was actually here. I witnessed this. I was on this street in the western side of Pittsburgh. It was a neighborhood. And the cops were using the sound cannon LRAD on protesters. It would launch out a command and then give you a high-pitched squeal that would make everybody run in terror. This was originally invented to be used against insurgents in Iraq. And
the Incredible Hulk.
Right. And now they're using it against people here in the United States. It's been used many times since then. It's called the LRAD. It sits right on top of these tanks. It's a giant sound speaker that can be aimed. You can turn it up to different levels. You can see footage of it in Police State 4, The Rise of FEMA. Now, Business Insider had an article that came out in 2011 talking about lots of different weapons that are being used. Here's an invisibility cloak that makes tanks disappear. Now, scroll on up through this. They also have a phaser rifle, which shoots out a laser blast, blinding people. Definitely alien-type technology. Here's a wall of tasers used to combat protesters coming to a protest near you, no doubt. Here's like a drone-type tank.
That's like a carrier of some sort. You can walk around and they can follow you.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's to provide backup, essentially, but this is unmanned. Here's the microwave gun. This came out in 2008. And basically, if you're walking towards it, it'll heat up the layer of skin right underneath you and cause burning sensations. Being used in wartime, also going to be used here. Here's another laser weapon that's being used. I'm going to put a link here below, and you can actually go watch a video Alex made about a year ago about lasers being used and how they're being used in the United States. We melted Star Wars figurines at the same time, so it's pretty cool. And then, of course, you've got these drones here that have, you know, kind of like a personnel drone, shoots mortars, machine guns. Did you ever see these in
Yeah, they took
combat?
What they did is they took that EOD robot that they use and then just fixed a weapon on there and then added a control to it with a screen, and they were able to drive it around and shoot, try to keep people out of the way.
Right, and this came out in 2011. Now we have, from the Daily Mail, U.S. military is testing a gun that could turn anyone into an ace sniper. It's basically a smart gun that helps you aim. So no more missed shots. They're all headshots at this point. And that's going to be coming to a battlefield. And then
it gives you the actual wind corrections and all that stuff, too, to tell that shooter what to do to put in
right.
to get that. I mean, it definitely dumbs it down for anybody.
Makes anybody a world-class sniper. Here's the railgun. Hurls a shell over 5,000 miles per hour. It takes them up to Mach 7. And basically, this is to get the projectile past armor, you know, anything.
It can go through anything. I mean, that's a scary.
Use electromagnetic technology. So basically nothing is going to be safe at this point. You're not going to be able to hide anywhere. Alex has talked many times about the bunker-busting weapons, the Sabos that are up orbiting the Earth at this time. So there are weapons like this, but the video that you just saw with the Taliban, UFO-killing Taliban spaceship, doesn't exist. It's been debunked. Stay tuned for PrisonPlanet.tv for more types of videos like this. You can watch Paul Joseph Watson's video that he made last week debunking the chemtrail video that somebody put out that went viral. So you can't always trust everything you see out there on the internet, and it definitely helps to do your own fact-checking. And, you know, like Joe did, he just went and found the video of the same exact weapon that was being depicted as being a UFO-type based sparkler gun. So that's the video for today. And subscribe and send this out to people you know.
Infowars.com. There's a war on for your mind.
My friends, Alex Jones here to tell you about some of the most important information concerning you and your family's health. Radiation levels have more than doubled in the last 60 years in the Northern Hemisphere from all of the nuclear testing and radiological accidents. Radioactive contamination is now in most of the food supply. There's only two ways to avoid this. Move south of the equator or properly protect your thyroid with Nascent Iodine. Looking to protect my family, I've done deep research. Nascent Iodine is the purest, cleanest, absolute best form of iodine to protect yourself and your family. It's made right here in the USA, completely non-GMO. I searched out the best quality and now have developed a double-strength form of Nascent Iodine, exclusively available at InfoWarsLife.com. Nascent Iodine is on record as one of the only safe ways to detox from fluoride poisoning. Survival Shield Nascent Iodine. Secure your super high-quality Nascent Iodine today at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com.
Hi, I'm Shane Steiner. A lot of you have been following my progress using Supermail Vitality. the last 19 weeks has been an incredible experience. I was feeling a little down and lethargic during the holidays, and none of the supplements that I was taking were doing any good. That's when my longtime friend from high school, Alex Jones, introduced me to Super Male Vitality. I was a little skeptical at first. Not only would I have the energy to work out and go to the gym, but it was actually the changes were happening to my body a lot more rapidly. My whole mood, my libido, everything had completely changed. The concentrated organic herbs, they stimulate your natural systems to produce the natural hormones that you need. I just really wanted to bulk up and hit it hard, and I went in for about the first 5 weeks and was lifting heavy weight and just really hitting it hard, and I gained 20 pounds of muscle immediately. Since that, I've decided I was going to lose some weight and slim down. I just changed up my workout a little bit, and 35 pounds came off. Folks, this is not a joke. This is not a gimmick. It's real. Super Male Vitality, available at InfoWarsLife.com.
We've talked a lot this week about what's going on in Albuquerque. Now, of course, they reached national attention because of the execution of a homeless man about 5 or 6 weeks ago. In the interim, there have been several more fatal shootings by the police department. And we have two former officers from the Albuquerque Police Department here tonight to talk about the attitude there. We have former police officer John Doyle and former police sergeant Thomas Grover, who is now working to become a civil rights attorney to fight from the outside and try to accomplish what he couldn't on the inside. As he told me, he doesn't like bullies, and he's going to do something about it as a lawyer that he couldn't do as a police officer. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us. Thomas Grover, former sergeant with the Albuquerque Police Department, and John Doyle, former police officer there. We've had so many incidents throughout the country of the police completely changing their attitude toward the public. We just covered a story out of Miami where they were looking for someone who had killed a cop. But once they found him, instead of trying to arrest him, they had about 24 officers fire several hundred bullets at him, just shooting the entire place up. There were children ducking for cover. And we saw this sort of thing happening in Albuquerque. It's what brought it to everybody's attention, how Albuquerque is perhaps one of the places that has one of the highest fatality rates of police shootings there. But this is something that's symptomatic all over the country. What's changed about the attitude of policing?
I think from what I've seen, and both from my own studies and pursuit of my master's dealing with police departments, what's really happened over the last 20 years is there's been this migration from police departments where they're public servants mm-hmm. to really government enforcement agents. And in support of that, that's when you've gotten all this sort of hyper-militarization, this hyper-paramilitarized structure of the police departments where they're no longer, you know, your friendly police officer where they're actually embedded and part of the community, but in fact, you know, isolated from the community and, you know, the coercive arm of whatever municipality, county, or state employs them. And what you're seeing here in Albuquerque, I think, is reflective of what's happening across the country where, you know, officers, for whatever reason, their departments are supporting, if not endorsing, falling to heightened levels of force rather than, you know, their really best and most skilled weapon, which is their mouth, their ability to communicate.
Yeah.
And that's all symptomatic of going from being a public servant to a government enforcement agent.
Yeah, we used to have the cop on the beat, but then that changed sometime in the 70s. We started hearing in all the Dirty Harry movies about the police referring to the public as civilians. I mean, that was a hint that there was some kind of a militaristic thing going. But it's really accelerated, hasn't it, in the aftermath of September 11th and the creation of Homeland Security? I mean, that's where I see it coming from. Is that your perception as police officers?
I agree.
Yes.
And, you know, in my background, you know, I was a field officer. I was a bicycle patrol officer where I immersed myself out in the environment and had, you know, numerous contacts. And then I saw these things that I wanted to change. And that's why I sought promotion as quickly as I could so I could help try to keep, you know, cops out there on the street. You know, John was one that I worked with, and he is your archetypal, you know, patrol officer who's out there and knows everybody and everything in his beat and really practice policing in the truest, most traditional way that it should have been. And his department, or our department at that time, really had problems with that. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, we're here today to talk to you, which is really at some point enough is enough.
Yeah. And there's been this attitude amongst the public that, you know, that's the way that the police really are, that they're there as kind of security guards, as peace officers. And I think for the most part, they're really surprised and taken off guard when they see, like we just saw in Texas, a 93-year-old individual killed by the police because he was carrying a gun. I mean, it's absolutely insane what we're seeing here. But let's talk about some of the specifics there, because in New Mexico, you just recently had the police academy, the state police academy, institute a shoot-first training procedure. Is that correct?
I don't have the specific details on what their use of force policy is, although I do know that they've departed from the traditional model that they've been using throughout the state, which is the reactive control model, which is, you know, an officer's actions are predicated upon, you know, the citizen or the suspect or the other person's actions first. Mm-hmm. If what you're hearing is that there's a proactive element, then that's a huge departure away from established training, and will find itself addressed in the courts, you know, as soon as the first incident of that sort of that practice happens.
You know, we saw here at InfoWars, somebody alerted us to a contractor who had what they called no hesitation targets. And these targets were basically just ordinary civilians. It would be a kid with a gun, a pregnant woman with a gun, an old man with a gun. And they were selling these to Homeland Security. And then they blocked that webpage and pulled it down. But we archived it first. And in New Mexico, I covered a story there where an instructor at the State Academy called it a shoot-first training program and refused to teach that curriculum and actually resigned over that issue. But there's other issues, too. I mean, when I was looking at, since we've seen this homeless man killed, there have been three more fatal shootings by the police department there in Albuquerque. One of those was a 19-year-old girl, Mary Hawks. They were looking for a stolen vehicle, which led them to a trailer park. And at 5 in the morning, they cordoned off the area and announced that they were going to be releasing dogs. Is that what they would typically have done in your tenure there, Officer Doyle? I haven't asked you a question yet. What is that standard procedure, or is that something new?
Sure. If they're looking for a suspect, what they'll do is with the Albuquerque Police Department, if they have a certain area that they believe that suspect's in, they'll set up a perimeter. They'll have officers that go in each corner of that perimeter, and then they'll flood the area with more officers. They'll hold that perimeter until they can then search it, stay out of it, keep it safe, announce the citizens through PA that they're out there, let them know to stay inside their house so no one gets accidentally bit or has a run-in with the police or gets, you know, hurt by any actions of an offender. But, they'll cordon off an area, and then they'll call in K-9, and they'll systematically search that area and go from there. But if they, you know, I don't know. That's exactly the way they would do it. They would call in a K-9 unit to search the area.
Okay. All right. Well, when I looked at that, I mean, that description of it sounded a lot like when they went door to door in Boston, the aftermath of the bombing there, looking for a terrorist suspect and essentially pulling people out at gunpoint in their houses. I mean, would that be part of standard procedure?
That's not something I would do. And I wouldn't never pull anyone out of their house at gunpoint. You know, we would check the houses, and what we would do is we'll look for suspicious activity. But what as an officer, what I would do is just make the citizens aware that for their safety, to kind of stay inside their house, kind of stay put. Just be aware, call 911 if they hear any suspicious activity or anyone in the backyards or, you know, causing a commotion that could alert us to the area and let us know where that suspect might be.
But to add, I think you illustrate a really good point, which is they essentially treated a nonviolent offense, that being, you know, the unlawful taking of a car, and, you know, she wasn't found in the car and then fled. They found information that led her to the car.
That's right.
You know, so we had a nonviolent offense, yet they treated it in a manner consistent with what happened in Boston with a large scale act of terrorism. To treat all things the same like that, you know, I don't think that's how we want our departments to operate. I really don't.
Exactly. I would agree with you. And I saw some footage of her fleeing through a parking lot where they had surveillance cameras. Now, what happened, for those who don't know the case, She fled out of the trailer park. They pursued her. And then an officer said that she pulled a gun on him and he shot and killed her. Now, when I saw her running, I mean, she looked, you know, young girl, she's panicked, she's running with both hands. I mean, she didn't look like she was carrying anything or trying to keep something on her. Now, the interesting thing about that is that he had, cameras that he did not use because I guess, you know, when they had that video footage of the homeless man shot, I guess a lot of them maybe thought twice about whether or not they wanted to use their cameras. But if she did, in fact, pull a gun on him, those specific cameras, once he activated it, would have gone back with a 30-second buffer. So he could have protected himself and proven that she really did have a gun. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yep. So that kind of brings up the whole issue of the corruption that's there, because there's a lot of investigation going on with the former police chief about this contract with Taser for these specific cameras, the Axon cameras. Is that correct?
Yeah, those cameras were considered the top in Consumer Reports, the Axon cameras. Now let Tom explain that. Tom knows a lot.
My understanding is that there's a multifaceted investigation going on regarding the former chief's conduct with Taser, and that, you know, the selection of that particular product isn't exactly consistent with his representations, which was, it was the only product out there. There's been publication by the Department of Homeland Security, by the Federal Bureau of Investigation that, you know, show there's as many as 10 different vendors providing officer-worn, digital video recording equipment. So it's an unfolding investigation. And my understanding is that at the earliest, we're going to hear something in June about where they're taking it, but It is ongoing.
Let me hang right there because I haven't been able to get to this case of Mary Hahn yet, and we're out of time, but I want to continue this interview after the end of the program. We'll have that online for everybody. Stay with us. Right after the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about the corruption, and then we're going to talk about a suspicious murder case of a civil rights attorney in Albuquerque.
Celebrate the spirit of freedom and liberty upon which our nation was founded at InfoWarsShop.com. Molon Lave is ancient Greek for come and take it. This popular design combines both classic Greek Spartan imagery with modern M16 assault rifles. Now available in women's tees and proudly made in the USA. And now you can protect yourself from corrupt cops with the InfoWars dash cam. It's your car's black box that records all that the driver sees and hears. And introducing the Blockit Pocket. It renders your phone undetectable while protecting your private data and your health. Or take back your privacy and protect your personal information by getting your very own detractor cell phone pouch. So get incredibly high quality freedom-based products and help fund the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
Well, I wanted to continue this interview because there's so much to talk about what's going on in Albuquerque. As we mentioned, it's symptomatic of so many things that are happening throughout the country in police departments. It's not just the attitude toward the public. It's not just the corruption. But as we see in the murder of a very prominent civil rights attorney, there's a lot more than just escalated number of fatal shootings there. Now, just before the break, we were talking about the contract between Taser and the Albuquerque Police Department, the former police chief. Before he left, he had a lot of contact with him, and some news media there in the area have looked at emails going back and forth. It looks like there may have been some unethical, inappropriate behavior guarantees before he left the employ of the APD while he was no longer police chief but still employed there. And then afterwards, there may be some issues with that. But it's not just the cameras, is it? Isn't there some other no-bid contracts that were put in there by the Albuquerque Police Department?
I think when you start looking at the vendors who have benefited or have any sort of contractual relationship with the city, with the department, whether it's armor that officers or issued or bought, whether it's weaponry, that being, you know, the Smith & Wesson M&Ps, or now the Glocks, because yesterday the department is now disallowing all officers from carrying any personally owned weapons. So now Glock is going to get a big contract for outfitting the department with new pistols. Whether it's rain gear or uniforms, you know, the department has the ability to steer its personnel towards certain vendors to buy those products. And over the years, the department has been, you know, fairly selective in who it sends, what gear is worn and who, the officers, what vendor the officers are sent to, regarding that equipment. So there are vendors that, because they carry a specific line of clothing or particular, piece of equipment, that benefits substantially because you have 1,000 officers now going off to buy, you know, a $250 right. jacket.
And I think it parallels exactly what we've seen for decades with the military industrial complex. You can very easily tailor your request for a proposal to something that makes this particular product over here very, the only one that fits that RFP. And then you've got a no-bid contract. We've seen it done with Halliburton, for example. I mean, you know, you can do this over and over again. The military does this constantly. And I think that's a big part of what we're seeing now is the military-industrial complex moving into the surveillance state, to the police state, the militarization of the police. They see it as a major profit center. Just another element of that corruption. Now, one thing I want to talk to you about is the case of Mary Hahn, because this is someone that you knew personally, and we hear a lot about the number of shootings that are there. We've seen the attitude of the police change towards the public. We've seen questions of ethics and corruption with these no-bid contracts. But there's another aspect of this, too, and that is people who stand up to the system, a civil rights attorney like Mary Hahn, and what happened to her. Tell us a little bit, for those who are not in Albuquerque, tell us a little bit about Mary Hahn and why she was not liked by the APD.
She was a very prominent and very aggressive civil rights attorney that brought a significant amount of litigation against the city and against the department, as well as other police departments in the state, and prevailed on many, many actions to the benefit of citizens that were harmed and had their rights violated by government actors, whether it's the police or actually even city employees. And, you know, she, first in New Mexico, I mean, as a female and as an Asian, she was very outspoken and very distinctive. And she really brought a lot of heat on the department and really pushed back on a lot of misconduct. And in November of 2010, she was found deceased. And at her scene, it was flooded by three deputy chiefs, other lieutenants and captains. I mean, a completely departure from how a normal, unattended, suspicious death would be processed. So they flooded the scene, and in doing that, they precluded any reasonable investigation into it.
Let's unpack that a little bit, because we have the public safety director, Darren White. He gets a call, and then they looked at his phone records, and there was an unknown caller came to him, and then moments later, he sends out a whole bunch of calls to the city attorney, to deputy police chiefs that are there, several of those, also to assistant city lawyer. I mean, these are some of the most powerful people in law enforcement and in city government, and they all turn up at her house, and it's so many people that the guy that was there, the first responder, said that he'd never seen anything like that before. He said it was totally unprecedented. They totally destroyed the crime scene. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. And I mean, you know, for anyone else, if they called the police because of, you know, finding a coworker or a friend having passed away when they weren't expected to because they didn't have an illness or have any problems going on, you know, the response is from the ground up with your first responders. And then, you know, the basic protocol is an unattended death is a suspicious death, and all suspicious deaths are processed until we've figured out what they are. Mm-hmm. You know, her, you know, you have a diminutive 100-pound Asian female, and in theory, you know, she passed away from carbon monoxide poisoning, but they never did any investigation to support that declaration, which was made by a deputy chief that had no, or by a captain at that time, that had no business being there, had no business inserting himself into the investigation whatsoever. And then you have, yes, you have the public safety director, the city attorney, you have public information officers, you have other deputy chiefs, and you know, I'm told there's the allegation is that there's as much as 25 unauthorized personnel that have left the scene.
And one of these reports I saw here says the deputy chief of police, Feist, went to the house and removed all first responders. And then what happened was she had a couple of heirloom family pieces of jewelry that were valued at $100,000. They went missing. But talk about some of the anomalies of the crime scene. I understand her feet were on the, she was on the driver's side where the steering wheel is, yet her feet were on the dashboard and she had a broken toe.
She was, the way she was positioned in the car, she was sort of crunched into the front seat. Both of her left feet were pushed up on the dashboard between the steering wheel and the door. There's indications that the door was slammed shut, and when it did so, it compressed her feet. Mm. So, you know, when she went into rigor mortis, you know, that impression is significant on her feet. So it, you know, it's not as if someone relaxed and put themselves to sleep in the car. It, you know, it shows compression. All the windows in the car are down. Now I've taken suicides or attempted suicides by vehicle emissions, and they, not only do they always have the windows up to keep the amount of, air out, but there's usually a hose going from the exhaust into the cabin of the car. I mean, we have the exact opposite here. There's increased ventilation.
Also, the car was not running and still had half a tank of gas, I understand.
Exactly. And we're talking about a BMW that should have continued to run until it ran out of gas. But no, it still had fuel in it, and it had a dead battery. So, you know, there are plenty of flags saying, wait a second, something's wrong here. But because of the actions by the brass of this department and those individuals that were leaders of the department and their absolute deliberate indifference, if not, you know, conspiracy to make this happen, you know, she gets written off as a suicide. And any homicide detective out there knows that if you want to cover up a murder, you stage it to look like a suicide. And that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the New Mexico Attorney General, Gary King, has said that he did not think that it was definitely a suicide. He is very wishy-washy about it. He says, I can't say that it was, that it does, the evidence does not definitively indicate that she took her own life. He wouldn't come out and say that it looked like she was murdered, although it clearly does look like she was murdered.
Yes.
Yes. Well, now, that was kind of a watershed moment for you, wasn't it, Thomas?
For me, it was. I mean, that put me in a position where, you know, if I was already on the path of, you know, of progression from getting my master's, from promoting the department, and I knew I was headed to law school. But at that point, it was very clear to me that this is a department that, you know, you're either with them or you're against them. And to be with them, sometimes meant you had to endorse, you know, illegal or absolutely conduct that's in conflict with the oath we take to wear our badge. Now, where it got crystallized for me is when the following year is when the department terminated this officer, John Doyle, who's arguably absolutely one of the best officers I've ever encountered in my life. And, you know, they went at him at a level that I never, ever, ever had seen in terms of the aggression to not only terminate his employment, to actually try to criminally indict him. Hmm. And in the setting of all the things that I had seen and all the times they'd looked away, and all the pressure that I'd felt or had been pushed upon me to, you know, not make waves, which that's what I would do. It's like, this is wrong. This either needs to stop or be fixed. I mean, that's what we do as cops.
What happened to Officer Doyle? Tell us what happened. Our Officer Doyle, you tell us.
Before I was terminated, there was a shooting, where there was bulletins being put out about Aaron Brother gang members who were threatening the Albuquerque Police Department. It was over like a year period. And, just prior to that, you know, in 2011 was this, was a shooting. It was a police involved shooting where, an alleged member of the Aryan Brotherhood was shot by the police. During that shooting, I was briefed, during numerous other encounters with, other detectives and APD personnel in reference to, other gang members. And, namely one in particular, was Nicholas Bloom, who was wanted, was a suspect in a murder that happened at a hotel where a girl was shot in the head. He was also wanted on, warrants. I believe it was two warrants for, it was home invasion. It was aggravated burglary, false imprisonment, kidnapping, stuff like that. I was given a pretty good history on this guy and description of this guy. He's shown photos of this guy. So I knew he was a pretty bad guy. that, and besides what the officers are telling me about this guy, that he was, you know, he was kind of on a warpath. He was, you know, he told the officers that, you know, he was going to shoot the next cop that he encountered. So, you know, we were kind of on a heightened awareness about this guy. And about a couple of days later, we run into him. He goes through an intersection at high rate of speed in front of us, and we get behind him. He pulls to the side of the road, and then he just right after that, he takes off again and winds up going in oncoming traffic for a few blocks, almost hits a few cars. It's about 8:20 at night. Turns, goes around behind a hotel, and he crashes into the back of the hotel. He's got an accomplice in the truck with him, and he's armed with a handgun. He bounces out of that truck and runs, and my partner goes in foot pursuit and gets caught in the basement of Barcelona Suites, where he's apprehended by my partner. As you know, he chases him, goes into the, drops into the basement, about a 7-foot drop into the basement. And as he's running, he's reaching into his waistband, for a weapon. Mm-hmm. So as this progresses, I lose sight of my partner. He goes into the parking garage and, tackles Nicholas Bloom as he's again reaching, you know, from, I didn't see this because I was still seconds out. You know, I had lost sight of my partner. He's in this parking garage, and I come in, when I look up as I land in that parking garage, they're fighting on the ground, and he's trying to get his arms out from underneath him. When I run up, that's when I see it's definitely Nicholas Bloom. It's this guy I'm briefed on, and he goes, his hands go to his waistband. They go underneath of him, and my partner yells, he can't get his hands, he's reaching for something. Immediately, I start with kicks. You know, the distractionary technique, officers say distractionary technique, you know, and it's a way of describing things. You know, it could be anything. It could be kicks, punches, whatever. Technically you'll describe distractionary kicks, but I use distractionary techniques, but I use kicks. I use kicks to force his hands out rather than going at deadly force. Mm-hmm. I used those strikes, and it was explained to the department. It was explained to my commander, why I did that. They were fearing going to the ground with the subject. My partner's already on the ground, approximately 30 yards away. And another 30 yards away is the entry points where anyone in the public can come right into that parking garage and have an upwards vantage point. And actually, the second suspect had Nicholas Bloom's gun. He had dropped it in the truck as he was getting out. I believe he did not know he had done that. That's why he had reached on three separate accounts during the foot pursuit. Twice during the foot pursuit. And then when he gets on top of him, he's reaching. And hence my partner yelling that he's reaching for a gun. He admitted to ingesting cocaine, admitted to drinking alcoholic beverages, was totally out of control that night. I knew we had just a totally out of control subject on our hands. I explained this to my commanders, and I myself went to the management to obtain the video footage that was subsequently released to the media, and to document my actions, to show what I had done. I had written my report as to what I had done. And I had then submitted submitted my report. My supervisors had then gotten the tape, the videotape, submitted that tape, during their investigation. An internal affairs investigation was opened up, on me, where I explained, you know, due to the fear of Nicholas Bloom reaching like that, my partner being on top of him, trapped on top of him, fighting with him, the fact that we were using our in-car radio, so our handheld mics were off. From the time we called out with the incident where we'd spot the subject starting to, accelerate at a high rate of speed and crossed into traffic, almost striking vehicles it was about maybe a mile, where he had taken off in his vehicle and to where he had crashed. And then it was maybe a 2.5 block foot pursuit and then a struggle inside the basement of the complex, was altogether around 75 seconds. This guy had escaped twice before from tactical units.
Did they maintain that you had not handled this properly, that you should not have fought him? What they maintain, you should have shot him or what?
Well, you know, that's been said. You know, people have come up to me and said, you know, you'd been better off if you would have shot him. You know, you live and you learn. I believe we did do the right thing. We you know, lethal force is the last thing you want to use. I mean, I was brought up in 1990. I've been involved in a lot of lethal force encounters that I chose not to use deadly force in. Mm-hmm. And because of that, lives were spared. And a lot of these people, some of these people have actually gone on to, rehabilitate themselves and become better citizens. You know, So it's the last thing. It's the very last thing you want to use is deadly force.
Yeah.
I consider it a failure if you have, if there's other options, you know, that present itself, you know, and you have to take a life, you know, then again, sometimes you have to do it, but you know, if you can avert it, you do. And as a police officer, that's your job.
Yeah.
And that night, you know, like I've said to other people, you know, people that I've talked to in interviews, that use of force looks horrible no matter what it is. I never stepped away from that. You know, I explained that and, you know, we were an open book from the beginning of this, but when I submitted this, my commander, looked at everything and he said, you know, yeah, he says, yeah, you're right. And so I told him the video, it looks bad. I said, but you know, when I explained the circumstances surrounding it, what led up to it, what was going on, what was on my mind, after an investigation was conducted, there was no issue with this. My commander, signed off justifying my use of force, justifying my actions. And, you know, it was sent up the chain. As it was working its way up the chain, all these other circumstances are going on, kind of like the satellite matter, in reference to the upper command staff, the administration. You have, you know, the taser things working its way through the pipeline. You have, the Mary Hahn case. You have, you know, the heat that the Albuquerque Police Department got over the West Mesa murders that were unsolved and being accused of turning their heads, you know, turning a blind eye to what was going on when things were being reported under suspicious activity, concerning, certain women, you know, involved that were found out there.
So you think they just threw you overboard as kind of a scapegoat?
Yes.
No, I'm 100% sure that, you know, that is exactly what they did. You know, because, and this is because the chief, when this video was put forth and it was put up the chain, everybody knew about this. In a way, Albuquerque Police Department works. There's they'll get an IA number. So a supervisor will pull an IA number when he has an internal affairs investigation to conduct. And it'll be, say for the year, it'll be I-1-40. You know, it'll be the year and the IA number. So, and then what they'll do is they'll assign that IA to the case and then investigation is conducted. So they had an IA number and the chief's advised every Monday, it's called Coffee with the Chief. They have, the lieutenant has with the chief and he briefs him on what comes in that week. And they tell them, hey, you know, there's a video here. This is what happened with this, along with any other, you know, incidents that come in that they're going to investigate. So the chief knows about that and he knew that there was, you know, an investigation coming up the pipeline. After it's concluded 3 months later, it's sent up the chain and then, I'm cleared by my commander and then the chief calls to have me put on administrative leave and he puts my, reassigns my partner onto administrative reassignment. And, after that, the investigation, they open up another IA, and subsequently fire me based on that IA. And that's where, down the line, they get caught lying at another hearing. At my LAA board hearing, they get caught. The IA investigator, confirms, actually he does pretty much a 180 in his testimony and, justifies my use of force after he had said it was excessive at an administrative hearing. They came at me and my partner with everything they had. They advised us to take the Fifth Amendment. They advised us not to talk. They advise us not to give statements. If you don't give statements, you lose by default. You get fired. You get fired from the department if you don't give an IA. And as an investigator, you know, if you have something, you know, one investigator doesn't want to talk to his target.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, if you have your target and you know,
very strange. Well, we're almost out of time. Real quickly, what do you guys think as people who have worked on the inside? You've seen the corruption. You've seen the excessive use of force there. What do we do? How do we move on this? What should we do in your opinion from somebody who's been on the inside?
I think, you know, you have to accept that there are these issues going on and that only happens when you have full transparency and sunlight on the department. There's not a doubt in my mind that the Albuquerque Police Department will have to be restructured to a point where you wouldn't even recognize it. When they're done. And that's what's going to have to happen with the department. DOJ's report is on force with the department is really about a chapter in a much larger book. And it's those other chapters that this city and this department fought against the DOJ from coming in, to keep them from doing their investigation. You know, they treated Officer Doyle as if he had executed somebody on the street illegally when in fact, you know, he used intermediate force to effect an arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're going from here is that you know, it's inevitable what's going to happen in this department is that it's going to be completely dismantled and restructured and reformed. The question is, how long is that going to take, and how brave and courageous is both the department personnel and the city leaders going to be to affect that change, to restore the credibility and legitimacy this department has to have with the community? It's the largest department in the state, it's the largest city in the state, and it has what it, you know, it's really a role model for the rest of the state. And really, the longer that process takes, the worse off everyone's going to be. And right now, I haven't seen anything that suggests they're going to be brave or courageous to do what needs to be done.
No, absolutely not. I mean, after the meeting on Monday night, the city council responded and said, we're going to increase security and we're going to come up with new rules to make sure you guys shut up. I mean, they're not interested in, they're not even interested in any reform. And you talk about transparency. I mean, I can tell you that if I go down to the airport here and ask them about a policy question, the public information officers will stonewall us. Nobody from the top to the bottom of government anymore wants to even talk to the press, talk to the public. Everything is top secret. It's like they all work for the CIA, and frankly, I think they do, you know, but it's absolutely crazy the attitude that is pervasive in government, whether it's local government or the federal government anymore.
You know, Alex, it just comes back to being a human being. That's all these people want. You know, you just treat them like a human being. And you think, you know, well, how would you like to be treated? And, you know, when you move away from, you know, officer safety is an issue, you know, but, you know, public safety is an issue. You know, the public needs to go home. It's the public first, and that's our job. That's what we're to do. And you're right, you know, to retaliate against people for wanting to speak their mind, for wanting to be heard, it's just unacceptable.
It's un-American.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll be watching that, and thank you so much. I know you told me when we talked pre-interview, Officer Grover, that you got into this because you don't like bullies. That's something we all share, and I hope that you can have a big impact there as a lawyer, working, like you said, on the outside, trying to get something done that you couldn't get done on a system that doesn't want to be changed from the inside.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Well, as he said to me, it's almost as if they're trying to drive the good cops out of the system. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to create an adversarial relationship between the police and the public, getting the police to recognize this as occupied territory. Very dangerous. And we can only hope that there are many more people that are like these two officers that will stand up for what is right. Well, that's it for tonight. Please join us on Monday at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com. Members can share their passcodes with up to 11 other people, and your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.